To Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me, as always, is Jason.
Yo!
How you doing, man?
Doing great. How you doing?
Oh, I'm kind of achy. I'm a little pained.
Yeah, what did you... Why don't you tell the listeners what you did this weekend?
Oh, gosh, what a weekend. My wife and I went to Mackinac Island this weekend. It's not really our anniversary right now, or our anniversary is until September, but for the last 2 years, we've been... trying to plan a trip to Mackinac for our anniversary, and we just couldn't make it work.
Right.
So we decided to screw that and just go in May instead of September.
It's a nice time to go.
Great.
For non-Michigan listeners.
Yeah.
So Michigan is two peninsulas. There's the lower peninsula and there's the UP, as we call it, or the upper peninsula. Mackinac Island is smack dab between those two, right by the straits where there's the Mackinac Bridge, which is a big bridge. And
yeah.
It's fancy pants and stuff, so...
Yeah, it's a cool little touristy place. It's a real small island. I'm not sure what the acreage is, but there's a road going around the perimeter along the shoreline the whole way, and it's an 8 mile stretch around that. So it's a real small place. And it's one of those cute kind of places where you can only get there by ferry. No cars are allowed on the island. Everything is you either ride bikes, you walk, or you ride in a horse-drawn carriage. And you know it's a cute little place to go.
Yeah, the Grand Hotel is one of the big things there. Yep. There's like. The movie Somewhere in Time.
Somewhere in Time.
With Christopher Reeve.
And Jane Seymour.
Oh, yep. Look at you. Wow.
I haven't seen it, but...
I haven't either, but every time you go there, they're talking that movie
it's
up.
It's for sale.
Yeah. Everywhere.
Yeah. We had a great time. The thing is that we decided to walk the 8 miles around instead of ride bikes, because my wife and I are kind of on a health kick right now. We're trying to lose weight and exercise more.
Right.
And, you know, we did it in 4 hours, and we weren't, you know, we weren't power walking.
Right.
Plus, we took like a 40-minute lunch break in the middle of it. But still, 8 miles when you're not really that much of a walker in general, that was a haul, man.
That's a lot. My wife and I, every year we go there, we usually go there once every year or once every other year.
Okay.
We bike around the island. Like you said, you can rent bikes.
Yeah.
And, that is a lot easier. You can do that in about 2 hours if you're not trying.
Yeah.
You can still stop for a lunch break and like go up some of the trails and stuff, and you can do that in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And you're not that tired when you get back. But
we were pretty wiped out.
4 hours is that's a big hike, 8 miles. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Of course, and back when I was a Boy Scout, it was nothing.
You well, know. you were smaller then.
I
right?
was smaller and lighter and in
younger.
Better shape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better muscles and such.
So yes.
That's good.
Right. Better condition in general. Yeah, but the plus side, apart from it being a really great weekend, is fudge.
Yeah, fudge.
Yeah, man.
Mackinac Island is known for their fudge.
Uh-huh. We came back, I think, with 3.5 pounds of fudge.
That's a lot of fudge.
It's
that's,
too much fudge.
That's expensive, too. Their fudge is like $7-8 a pound, right?
It wasn't that bad. Plus, you know, you get a hotel room and you get a package deal. And,
right.
You know, a free half pound of fudge. You go to the other place and say, buy 2 half pounds, get the next half pound free. And
right, yep.
So it adds up quick.
It does. It does.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
It is.
Yeah, what you drinking there?
I am drinking Moo Juice. M-O-O-J-O-O-S.
Moo Juice.
Oatmeal Stout by... Brow Brothers Brewing Company in Lucan, Minnesota. I don't know. First time I've had it. It's pretty good. It's an oatmeal mix out. I like it.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah. Good. Thumbs up for you.
Thumbs up. Yeah.
Good. I'm drinking Spaten.
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 Where is that from?
Brewed in Munich, Germany since 1397. It's a premium lager. It's a malt liquor. This is a really, really awful beer that my father-in-law just happened to leave in the fridge a few weeks ago. So, you know, here and there I'm finishing it off.
Hey, it's beer. It's free, right?
So. Yeah, why not? Nothing wrong with that.
So, what you been playing lately?
Well, while we were in Mackinac, we picked up a game at a toy store there called Quad-Defy. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Quad-Defy.
Quad-Defy. Q-U-A-D-E-F-Y. It's a two-player game, two-player only. And I think we've talked before about how we like two-player games.
Yes, yes, we do.
Yeah, because it's just good for couples, good for us to hang out at home in the evenings and, you know, have a glass of wine and just play a game together.
Be clear, by us, he means him and his wife, not him and I.
Well, right, yeah. I mean, you can, you're welcome to hang out with a glass of wine sometime if you want. yeah, so it's an interesting game. It's all wooden blocks.
Yeah, okay? There's some nice wooden blocks in there.
Nicely put together. Yeah, the idea is that you have 16 pieces of kind of like Tetris pieces. Eight for each player, right? And some of them are kind of stained like in a walnut finish, and some are just kind of a natural light red oak kind of thing.
Okay.
All right. I think it's all pine. I don't think it's real hardwood, but yeah, that might be oak. Come to think of it,
I don't think that's pine.
Yeah, I think that is oak. Anyway,
we'll put a picture up so you guys can see what the heck we're talking about here.
Yeah. Oh, it's by Miranda Games. Miranda Games. M A R A N D A, or Miranda Enterprises, not games.
Excuse me.
Yeah. Patent pending. So these 16 pieces. Fit together, and you can build a cube out of them, a 4-inch square cube.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the way it works is that you each start with your 16 pieces, and you have the same 16 pieces, just a different colors, and you take turns placing them on a base, and there's a wooden base here that you build them on. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to force your opponent into putting a piece that extends beyond the boundaries of that 4x4 cube.
Okay, okay.
Okay? So if you can prevent your opponent from being able to play within the boundaries of the cube and force them to play outside of that, you win, they lose.
All right.
Okay? Real simple mechanics, real simple, easy pick-up-and-play thing. You know, nothing complicated about it at all. It's very tactile, which I like a lot. I like the big wooden blocks. We joked the other week about me being a terrible carpenter, but I actually am a big fan of carpentry, and I in my free time I build furniture, and you know, I made a dice tower to use for D&D and stuff.
And it was fancy too.
Yeah, you know, it's fun. I enjoy that stuff, so I really like anything that is made of wood, I guess. I appreciate that, you know, the craftsmanship.
Right.
But at any rate, anyway, it feels really good in your hand. It's I know it's loud. It's wood. I like that a lot. Now, drawbacks, it also plays really fast. I mean, you can play a whole round of the game in 5 minutes if you want to.
Okay.
Depending on how strategic you're being, how crazy you're getting into it. But the drawback is that we played 5 or 6 games of it in a row, and what we kind of found out is that whoever goes first loses.
Bummer.
That you kind of gets to a point where you start to run out of pieces, you know, which limits your options as to what you can place, and you kind of pay attention to what each other is doing. But it gets to a point where the cube is almost full,
mm-hmm.
And you both have 2 pieces left, and whoever went first has to place a piece before you, or before the other guy, and it's kind of a point where no matter what either one of you does, somebody's going to lose, that, you know, you're going
right.
to stick the thing out, and whoever went first is just at a disadvantage.
Right.
That's kind of frustrating. Now, if I was playing with little kids, you know, it'd probably be a different story, I think. But for adults that have maybe a better sense of geometry and spatial relationships and things, I think that's a little bit of a bummer.
No, I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
So, but that said, I mean, I still like it. I'm glad I bought it. It was a little expensive. I think you paid $37 for it, but I think that's because I bought it in a toy store at a tourist trap.
That, you know, being that it's wood, though, that might be why. I have a game I'll talk about sometime called Corridor, with a Q, actually. It's a lot like this, except for you're just trying to get your piece across a board, like a checker-style board.
Okay.
And you can put up walls, these wooden walls, and I want to say that was like $40 or $50.
Oh, really?
But it's just a bunch of wood slats, but they're, you know, fancy looking, so...
Yeah. I would say that this has a similar kind of polish and similar kind of finish to a nice set of Jenga blocks, you know?
Yeah, little heftier.
They're hefty, yeah. Right, because it's made of 1-inch cubes.
Right.
And Jenga's pieces are much smaller. But that gives you some idea of what the actual pieces look like. So, you know, I like it. I'm glad I got it. It'll certainly be a quick, easy thing to play. here and there. So
cool.
Yeah. How about you? What you been working on?
Recently, my wife and I, we picked up this game called The Forbidden Island, and it's a co-op game, which is cool.
Oh, man, we need more of those.
Yeah. You know, co-op games, I think, are a really neat idea. And so it's a co-op game. Basically, it's a tile-based game.
Okay.
At the beginning of the game, you set out the tiles in the shape of this island. And they're face-up. You can tell what they are.
Okay.
All the tiles have a nice paint job side. And then all the tiles also have a blue side. So this is like the normal side.
Okay.
There's this blue side that represents that they're flooded. So what's happening in the game is the island is sinking.
Okay.
And you are attempting to steal... Oh, I'm just bashing this. It comes in a metal tin box.
Yeah.
It's very nice. It was $15, so it's a pretty...
Oh, it's cheap.
Yeah. And it comes with these big plastic treasures you have to steal as
well.
Oh,
cool.
So there's four of those.
Yeah.
So while the island is sinking, your team has to get to the four treasures, which involves card matching.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get four of a kind of one of the four types of cards. Then you can play it on that shrine, get the treasure. You do that to all four treasures. Then you get back to what's called Fool's Landing, which is your helipad.
Mm-hmm.
And you play a helicopter card, and then you get out. Now, the whole time, on everyone's turn, the island is sinking. So what's cool is, if there's two players, the island sinks at the end of my turn and at the end of your turn. But if there's four players, the island sinks at the end of everyone else's turn, too. So the game scales very well because it gets harder. I mean, I would say, even though you have more people to get the four items you're trying to get, you have an island that's sinking, you know, faster, scaling-wise.
Sure.
On your turn, you can also, what they call shore up, which is if a piece of the island is starting to sink, you can step next to that and say, I'm going to sandbag it, basically, and that flips back over. But the catch is, if one island piece floods twice, it sinks. It's out of the game.
Oh.
So you can't get through there.
Gotcha.
So with the way the island is set up, kind of in this grid, you can get blocked to the places you need to go. You can get trapped where you can't get to the exit. Another neat mechanic they have in there, and if you don't mind, I'm going to roll this right into the mechanic of the week.
Yeah,
if that's cool. Because this is the mechanic I want to talk about. So there are six character cards in the game. There's an engineer, a navigator, an explorer, a pilot, a diver, and a messenger. Each one of those has a power, and you just randomly deal those out. What's so cool about that to me is, I've seen this in some other games and I really like this, and some of the game ideas that I pitched to you, Rob, either on the show or outside of the show, I focused a lot on different characters, like, you know, like with the zombie game we talked about where you have your own character cards, right?
Right.
I really like that because I feel like that just adds another layer to the game. And for instance, in this game, I mentioned shoring up to where you can try and dry two tiles. The engineer can do two instead of one. For every one that the one guy could do, an engineer can do it twice. The explorer has better movement. He can go diagonally where everyone else can only go orthogonally back and forth.
Okay.
The pilot, once on his turn, can fly to any spot on the island, which is very powerful. Or the diver can swim through places no one else could. So it really adds a lot of flavor to the game because there are six cards, and you know generally it's a 2-4 player game, so you're never going to be using all of the cards.
Oh sure, yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Okay.
Because you you get a variety when you play, but I just really like that idea of being able to limit your to kind of expand actually I spoke wrong your game options by just having different character cards.
Okay.
Have you played any games that involve that?
Yeah, I know that I have, and I'm trying to think of something specific. Like Bone Wars, I talked about, I think last week, and each player has to take on a specific character, who was a real life paleontologist at that time. But I don't think they have specific powers.
Okay.
The only other thing that comes to mind, of course, is Sentinels of the Multiverse. And
that's a very good example.
Yeah.
We will talk about this game in every episode, by the way.
Pretty much, because it's freaking a fantastic game. Yeah, but I mean that's maybe not quite the most appropriate example to use, because in Sentinels, that's, you know, most of the game is
right.
Picking a character and using that character specific stuff.
Right, it completely changes it.
Right.
I mean, the best example, I know I've seen it in other games, but the Small World would be a semi-good
example. Small World would be good, because you're not playing one character for the whole game, but every time you hire a new race to fight for you, they have different things they can do on the game board.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's good, yeah.
But I just think that mechanic is so easy to just lay into a card game.
Yeah.
Specifically, you know, card games make that, I think, super easy.
Yeah.
And I find with the card game ideas I'm coming up with, I'm very much drawn to that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, and I agree with you. I've got a couple other card games that I'm planning to pitch down the road that I don't really want to talk about them just yet. That might work for, but I could go back to my action movie card game idea that I talked about, I think, 2 weeks ago. And in that, you know, each player is trying to make a movie. I would use that idea or that mechanic in terms of their own movie studio.
Right.
You know, in different studios might have, you know, one studio would have a whole lot of base money to start out with, you know, more capital to buy that first script with, whereas another studio might be able to hire an actor for 10% less money, or
right, because they're like the artsy studio, or
yeah, right. So picking the studio that you're going to get with or that you're going to play with can be a strategic play in terms of starting the game, and that's the kind of the idea you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because we, you know, we found with Forbidden Island that there were times where I thought, gosh, I wish one of us was the pilot, or gosh, I wish one of us was the engineer. Yeah. So,
okay.
I was trying to think, too, of if you took other games and just tried to lay that into it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, gosh, what's a good example of a game?
Everybody Starts Equal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either, say Settlers of Catan. Most people know that game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you don't. No. but I mean, you know,
play it
you know the basis though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you were a specific tribe, say, or a specific nationality, Civilization is a good example of that, actually.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Civilization, because you know you're a certain peoples, and as those people, you have different bonuses. You're either better at war, you have a special unit.
Yeah.
That type of thing. You know that thing. Civilization, I think, is a really good example.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the game I talked about last week too, Lawless.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing where you are just yourself, but I mean, you know, you're a rancher, but you've got all these character cards out, and each character has different things they can do. You know, it kind of throws back. I used to play Magic: The Gathering back in the day, and that you know, that obviously revolves around the different cards you have down and the creatures and such. And
right.
So.
Yeah, I like that question you asked, though, of what kind of game could you put that into, and would it make it better? What about Carcassonne, which I guess you still have never played, so maybe that's a bad example. That, you know, everybody technically starts out the same, but what if you had the option where every player could take the role, take a different role and get a different bonus? Like, maybe one guy would get a bonus to points that he got from roads, another guy would get a bonus to points he got from cities, and another guy gets a bonus from farms. So, you know, that would change what you focus on, and right. would force other players to, or would encourage other players to try and foil you.
Right. Yep. And specifically say block your roads. Or, another good example of that actually is Citadels.
Mm-hmm.
In that game, you're trying to build a city, basically. Okay. You're trying to build your own district of a city. And each turn, you're a different character.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is their dealer rotates, and it goes to the dealer, and the dealer gets all of the character cards. And there are 9 cards. So you're playing with 4 players. There are going to be several. I don't think there's actually 9. I think I lied about that. But there's several, right? So you're actually going to have extras at the end, right? So there's these unknowns. So when you're the dealer, you get first choice of what character you want to be. And they all have different abilities. So if you're trying to make money that turn, maybe you want to be the merchant. If you're really concerned about somebody destroying your stuff, you want to be the priest. Hmm. You want to destroy other people's stuff, you want to be the warlord. You want to just kill someone to stop their turn, you want to be the assassin. Want to take their money, be the thief.
Yeah.
But what's cool about it is no one knows what you are, right? So you lay the cards down, you hand them to the person to your left, they choose one. Now, they can make an assumption of what you might be, because you do deal some cards out at the beginning, so you're missing two cards.
Gotcha.
But if there's two crappy cards missing and a really good one,
yeah,
they're going to make an assumption. Sure. So sometimes you'll draw a different card to try and throw people off. For instance, there's the queen card, and there's a king and a queen. And the king, the cool thing about the king is, he has no special power except for he gets to go be the dealer the next turn. Hmm. So he gets first choice next turn.
Gotcha.
Even if he gets killed, that still happens. So the queen gets a bunch of money if she's placed next to the king. Well, in a four-player game, if someone takes the king, you take the queen, you've got a pretty good chance of being next to them. About 75%, right? Okay. There's only one person who's away from you.
Yeah.
So yeah, what's cool about that is, like I said, you don't know. But I do like the idea that you do know as well. I do like the idea of having the cards in front of you. You know, mm-hmm. I'm this guy, you're that guy. And No, that's a bad example. I was going to say Bang, but no, I don't think that. Oh, it does work that way with Bang. Actually, yes, does yes. Bang, there's like 15 or 20 different character cards. And I think you're just supposed to randomly get one. But we actually, when there's four of us, we randomly deal four to everyone.
Hmm.
And then you get to pick which one you want. Because some of them are really awesome and some of them are just okay.
Hmm.
So, you know, it kind of behooves you to choose a good one because that will make a difference.
So, I don't think I played Bang.
Oh, Bang is super fun. It's like a spaghetti western style game.
Oh, okay.
Plays really well with like six players.
Oh,
six
you told
or
me
more.
About this. Yeah, yeah
all you're right. all around the room and you're trying to kill each other. And,
right.
And in addition to being that person, you're also another character. As in to say you are either the sheriff or a deputy or... And that's secrets. No one knows what you are, and you're trying to figure out who's what so you can get rid of them. And because everybody has a different mission. The outlaws want to kill the sheriff and the type of thing. So, okay.
Cool.
But the special powers of each character gives you very unique bonuses. You know, some can hold more cards in their hand, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
Some can shoot farther, you know, that kind of thing. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think that's a pretty solid mechanic for card games. I think it can work for board games as well.
I'm trying to. Well, obviously, there's Civilization board game, which I may have mentioned at some point. That's a really awesome set, and it's huge.
Right.
And I have yet to successfully play more than about three turns.
Right, because it takes a long time to play.
Because it takes so long, yeah. I'm trying to think of other board games that might use something similar to that. Because a lot of board games want you to kind of always start out on even situation.
That's a good point though, because like I said, a few different card games that I've thought of, I'd really like to include that idea into it.
Yeah.
And that's where balancing comes in, right? Because, like I said with Bang, it feels like some of them are not balanced. There are some that are awesome and some that aren't.
And see, that's what worries me. And why I'm a little hesitant about putting different character traits into some of the ideas that I've got for later is making them all balanced and making them all even. And that worries me.
Right.
That by making them different, I might be encouraging people to always pick one specific character. And whoever ends up with Joe Schmo character that's crappy is always going to lose as a result of that.
Right. So. And that's where I think if you're going to do something like that, it's kind of a cool idea to give extra cards, right? Extra character choices.
Yeah.
So that when you deal, you get to choose. You're not just like, here's the one Rob got. Oh, it's Joe Schmo. Oh, I hate that guy.
Yeah.
You know, you get Joe Schmo and somebody else, and you can pick not Joe Schmo.
Yeah. Right.
But I think they can be balanced. It just really depends on the game and how it works.
I think, it just takes hard work from the designer's point of view, probably.
With your movie card game, the action movie card game, that could be tough, finding a good balance, because, you know, any little bonus could really help.
Could really change the whole thing.
Yeah, or really hurt, you know, so.
Yeah, and I thought about that. I'm leaning more toward starting everybody out on even standing and just let the randomness of the cards that you draw and just the style of the play affect the outcome.
Now, one thing, just a thought, just trying to think of all the things we have to plan when we're trying to make games. Say that that's the game you decided
to
kickstart. Mm-hmm. That could be an optional bonus you could do.
Oh, good thinking, yeah.
Like as an optional rule, hey, if I raise 200%, I'm going to throw these 10 cards in.
alternate studio cards.
Yeah, or even like those those character studio cards saying like maybe the base game doesn't even need those. It's an optional rule. That's Citadels has that for his in case you get tired of all the people that are the thief, the assassin, blah blah blah, all that. Yeah. They have an alternate set. And you can swap as many or as little of those out as you want.
That's cool.
So, like, oh, I really hate this character. Nobody ever uses him. Let's swap him for something cooler.
Right on.
So.
That's great.
So, yeah, and I've noticed that with Kickstarter, some stuff where you'll see somebody, they'll keep adding options to their game as they raise more money because.
Right. Well, and Sentinels did that. I mean, they. Right. Yeah, with some of the backer bonuses, they've got alternate character cards. I think in the Infernal Relics Kickstarter that just finished up not too long ago, if you pitch in an extra $5 over your original contribution, you get a whole extra character deck that's not available anywhere else. They're adding in a whole extra villain too, just for backers that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise if you bought it retail. Yeah, it's incredible. I feel like we gush about those guys too much, but man, they deserve it. It's so cool.
You know why? I think they're the dream, right? I mean,
they are, aren't they? Yeah.
They just came out of nowhere and they made this brilliant game, and people just are flocking to it, and they should be. But it's just So I think that's why we talk about them a lot.
Because, I think so, because they're kind of what we want to be. Because
if we could do half of what they did with one game,
we would be awesome.
I'd be pretty happy with that. Yeah. I'd be ecstatic, I'd say.
I would be so happy. If I even do a quarter of the success they had, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Right now, well, yeah, that's an interesting. It's a good topic. It's a good mechanic to talk about and a good mechanic to think about moving forward. And I'm sure we'll come back to this. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely something that we'll have to think about factoring into
future projects. Right.
Yeah. So I guess maybe we'll move on to our next segment, practicing the pitch.
Yes.
It's my turn this week.
That it is.
So I thought I would talk about a board game idea that I have. Jason's giving me the thumbs up. I have a bottle opener that my aunt gave me when I was about 12 years old. And it's a severed thumb with a bottle opener stuck out of one end. It's just made out of plastic, but my crazy aunt gave that to me thinking that I was the kind of kid who would really like a severed thumb.
So you're the creepy kid.
And I have kept it all along because I thought it was cool to have a severed thumb. And now as an adult, it is the preferred bottle opener for opening beer in my house. And every time I have a party, somebody goes, "Dude, that is awesome."
Well, we'll show it to everybody. I took a picture of it,
good.
So you can post it in the show notes.
Cool. Yeah, as this show goes on, we're going to have more and more little photos of the weird crap I have in my house, right?
Yes.
Moving on from Tybo the Carrot Man into the thumb bottle opener. Anyway, what was I talking about?
You're pitching your game.
I'm pitching my game, yeah. Practicing the pitch. Okay, I want to put out there a board game idea that I've had.
All right.
Okay, it is no secret that I'm a lover of Carcassonne.
It's not a secret.
No, right. I really like the simplicity of the way it plays.
Mm-hmm.
I really like I like that the tiles. It feels good to me. You draw a tile, you put it down, and I like the way it can grow. That the game grows every time. It's always a different game every time. I love the strategy that leads to, and I was trying to think of if I was going to do a tile based game. What would I want to do if I was inspired by Carcassonne?
Right.
And so I came up with this idea that the game is called Wormholes.
I like the name already.
Okay.
You had me at hello.
I had you at holes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the idea. You are an alien, okay? And you are flying around in outer space. And outer space is a big place, right?
Right.
Big distances from point A to point B.
Long ways.
Long ways. So in order to travel more quickly and efficiently and safely from point to point through outer space, you need to move through wormholes. But wormholes are not really a common thing. But you as an alien, you have the technology to create wormholes.
That's pretty awesome technology.
It is. It's great. It's fantastic. So the game is played with hexagon tiles.
Okay. Yep.
And you have a pool of tiles, and you draw from the pool, and you are placing tiles down, and you have the little flying saucer tokens, which are your spaceships, okay? And you place that onto the path of a wormhole, okay? And you are building wormholes through space, trying to, you know, create these paths.
Right.
Okay? By putting your flying saucer on that path, you then claim that wormhole as one that you are building, and then nobody else can hone in on that wormhole. Nobody else can claim that or get points off of it.
Cool.
To get points, you have to close the wormhole. And by closing it, I mean you have to put a portal on the beginning of it and a portal at the end of it. Kind of an entry and an exit point.
Makes sense.
So that future travelers can move through that wormhole from point A to point B. Okay? So when you successfully complete a wormhole that goes, it would be minimum of two tiles, right? A portal to a portal, or for however many tiles that wormhole stretches, you would get 1 point for each of those tiles in that.
Okay,
in that
wormhole, so the right? distance and space it's jumping.
Exactly, basically. You get points. The longer your wormhole, the more points you're going to get. But it, of course, as long as that wormhole is still open, as long as it's not closed, that flying saucer that you have there is still stuck in that wormhole. It's working on it. It's building that path.
I see. So once you claim that wormhole, your flying saucer is stuck there.
He's stuck there.
I get you. Okay.
Until you close it, right? And that's a lot like building roads and building cities in Carcassonne.
Okay.
Okay. And a lot of this came from the idea that in Carcassonne, roads are kind of always marginalized. And I thought, well, what if roads were kind of the main focus of this?
Makes sense.
Okay. But then you can get point multipliers by passing your wormhole by planets. Planets, you know about satellites and spaceships and things. When NASA's sending satellites and rockets and things out into the solar system, they slingshot them around planets because they get a speed boost from the gravity, from the gravitational pull of right. those planets, right? So the idea is that if you swing your wormhole past a planet, you'll get a bonus for that. So every time your wormhole passes by a planet, you get an extra point for every tile that borders a planet. So some of the tiles won't have a wormhole on them. Some of the tiles will be planets that you put down.
Right. Okay.
So if they're hexagon tiles, so you might conceivably be able to loop your wormhole all the way around the planet and have a closed loop there. So for every tile that passes adjacent to a planet, you get an extra point. If your wormhole goes a full loop around a planet, you're going to get double the points for that planet.
Wow, okay.
Okay. Even more powerful than planets in terms of the energy they can provide are stars. Okay? A star, though, is not just made up of one tile. A star has to be three tiles put together.
Okay.
Okay? So each star, a tile may have one-third of a star on it.
Okay.
And hopefully you can get three halves, not three halves, what am I saying? Three-thirds of a star put together and put a whole star together. So for every tile of your wormhole path that passes a star, you get 2 points for that. But if you can do a full loop around a star, you're going to get 4 points for each of those tiles. All right?
Okay.
But of course, there's going to be far fewer stars than there are planets.
And then, so if you're trying to, I assume you go back and forth? Like I place a tile, then you place
a
tile?
Yeah, you take turns, right?
So wouldn't I want to block your star if you started to build a star?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Unless you can hone in on some of the energy benefit from that.
Okay. I just was curious. Mm-hmm. That seemed to me like that's what I would do. Block your star.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's, I mean, that, of course, would be a big part of the game. Would, you know, are you going to strictly focus on building things to benefit yourself, or are you also going to try and play some of your tiles that you're drawing to kind of thwart your opponent?
Right.
Right. Okay. The last feature of the game would be nebulas. A nebula in this idea is kind of an amorphous cloud of energy in the universe. If the path of your wormhole passes through a nebula, you actually don't get any points for that tile because the nebula drains energy from your wormhole.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But on the other hand, if you are working on a nebula, you can also put your flying saucer into the nebula rather than into the wormhole. And if you can then complete a whole nebula with no gaps in the borders of it, at the end of the game, you would get extra points for that because then you have committed that spaceship to draining that nebula of energy, and that's going to give you bonus points down the road.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's similar to making a farm in Carcassonne. That's kind of the idea. Only in that case, farms are these huge, massive, sprawling things, but in wormholes, a nebula might just be a small blob.
Okay,
so that's kind of the idea.
Cool.
I think it could be fun. I think it could be reasonably inexpensive to produce.
Yeah, how many tiles are you thinking?
Well, I would probably, well, you know, some of that would take testing, but I'm thinking probably 75 to 100 tiles.
Okay.
Is what I have in my head.
And do you draw so many? Like, I have 5 tiles in my hand. Or do you draw one at a time?
Well, that's something else that would have to be played with. Now, in Carcassonne, you draw a tile, you play that tile right away. But that might be an option that you can start the game by drawing 3 tiles or 5 tiles,
right,
and then choose from your hand of what you want to play each turn. That could change the strategy. And that's a good idea. You know, that had occurred to me, but I kind of washed it away when the idea first came into my head. But that might be a better way to play.
I'm just thinking, if you had those tiles, that would allow you to develop some greater strategy.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of like that idea, actually. I'm also not sure how many flying saucer pieces that each player might have. I don't know. I'm leaning towards 3, maybe 4 at the most.
Right. It would just depend. I mean, as long as... if you completed a wormhole, you get it back, right?
Yeah. But okay, if you put it in a nebula, you don't get it back until the end.
Right. So that's... you're super committing it then. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Which makes me think that maybe we should... maybe I should make it more rather than less.
Right.
But, you know, that's part of the strategy. Likewise, then, you know, you would want to balance the amount of path pieces to the number of portals that you end up with, because you don't want to have, you know, 65 path pieces and only 10 portal pieces, because then the most number of completed paths you can make in a game would be only 5 paths, you know?
Right, right.
So that would... counting the numbers there, you know, would be an important thing to do in balancing that.
It might be kind of fun, too, if there was a way to make somehow, for instance, a planet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just throwing random ideas out here. If the opponent could commit their spaceship to a planet that your wormhole passes, maybe there's some way they could screw with your wormhole, like during construction. You know what I mean? Or same with if you made it that once a sun was complete, or a star, mm-hmm, maybe there's something else you can do with it. That might make it so that your opponent is more likely... because here's what I see happening, in mm-hmm my opinion, with the star, right? I put the first star tile down, you block it. Boom, done. I can't finish the star. Because why wouldn't they do that every time?
Well, you wouldn't be able to play a tile against that unless the edges match up.
Okay.
Yeah. So you can't just have something dead end into emptiness. Like you couldn't if the tile itself has a path on it, that path can't dead end into empty space.
I see. Okay.
So right. So a star, if you have a third of a star there, you can't play blank space next to it, because that's impossible, and you know, that's not how a star would work.
Makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
So cool. you could put other things in there to make it difficult for somebody else to be able to put a star tile in there that matches the other edges, you know?
I see.
So that's kind of...
okay, that makes way more sense now.
Yeah, okay.
So, no, I like the idea. I think it's got some potential.
Yeah.
And it's a different kind of game. I mm-hmm like the idea of hex tiles rather than the... Carcassonne uses
squares.
Square yeah tiles, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hex tiles would give some different options
there. Yeah. Yeah, it's a little more spacey too, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I always think of outer space as being hexagons instead of squares. I don't know why. I think it comes from BattleTech, from when I used to play BattleTech.
Oddly, it does seem to make more sense to me.
It's for some reason, right? I don't know why.
Well, it's outer space. You can go anywhere, right? I mean, go any direction. Hex gives you just more directions to go.
I guess so. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's fun. I think it has potential. I don't know in terms of production cost how that would compare to a deck of cards, you know, a 100 card deck. I think it might be more expensive to produce that.
It's possible.
But But on the plus side, I mean, you'd be able to reuse a lot of assets. You know, you draw a path, and it's either gonna kind of only gonna have so many different ways across the tile that it can go, right?
Right.
Straight line, or you know, a curve one way or a curve the other way. That's kind of all there is to it. So, in terms of doing the artwork, I think once you settle on a design and a look for it, putting together the different types of tiles should be as easy as cutting and pasting elements together.
I would agree.
Which I think would work pretty well, which is appealing to me. So I think doing the artwork would be a pretty reasonable project, pretty reasonable task.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Rather than 100 different cards or something like that, right. That sounds a lot easier.
Right. Plus, of course, and you wouldn't even need printing on the back of the tiles necessarily. Right. But if you did, you could design that once and that's all there is to it, you know?
Yeah, basically it's just the...
Right.
The logo.
Right.
I kind of like, if you could, to have printing. A lot of the printing stuff I've looked at, I think, is two-sided, but I could be wrong. For tiles, I'm not sure, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
So, cards, but, obviously, those are pretty much two-sided.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, the other question then is you would need tokens. You would need a little flying saucer figurines or something.
Right.
and maybe, you know, you'd kind of have to see what you can get for that. You might just have to use some kind of generic plastic or wooden token of some kind. Actually paying for the production sculpture and production of an actual plastic flying saucer might be prohibitive.
That's true.
Unless I was going to order huge volumes, and I don't think on the scale we're thinking of to start with here, I don't think we could handle the volume that might require.
Right.
So I might have to go with something a little more generic, which would be kind of a bummer, but as long as you can play, that's what matters.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was trying to think of other options. If you could use like dice or something, or
yeah, I don't know. Now, so here's a question. That's all just straight up draw a tile, put it down. Do you think there would be any benefit in putting any dice rolling or combat into it? And I that thought had occurred to me in terms of maybe you could fight for wormhole. If you each start a wormhole from one end and they happen to connect later on, would there be any combat mechanic or any dice rolling to see who can, to fight for control of that path? Or would you just both score it out equally? Because obviously in a two-player game, you would just cancel each other out with score, but in a three or four or five or six-player game, however many players we end up with, both getting the score for it could be valuable.
Right.
So, I don't know.
That's true. Another thought, and this is just, I'm not sure how you're thinking of it, but for your spaceships, what if they had a starting point? What if they entered at the same place, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's not like, so for building wormholes, right? You can either play empty space, but if you're building a wormhole, say that your spaceship can't just hop to a place, right? It has to actually go through the wormhole.
Oh, so, and then you can only add to or build from a tile adjacent to where your piece
is. Well, that's where the extra ones would come in. Maybe on your turn, you can choose to move your flying saucers or place a tile. Or maybe some combination of the two.
Oh, I see, okay.
So, like, you'd all start on one, you know, you'd start on one side, you'd be flocking towards new wormholes, right?
Yeah.
But you claim that first wormhole, and you can build six tiles out rather quickly.
Yeah.
Now you've got a gateway that, you know, you or other people can go through.
Oh, so not just you can travel through a wormhole, but anyone can. Yeah, that makes sense.
Or you could claim a wormhole, and there could be your combat system come in. After I claim the wormhole, I got the points for it because I built it.
Right.
And now you want to use it. Maybe you can block it for me. There's a rail game like that. Euro rails or something? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
okay.
Meaning to where you can block other people from using things. So,
okay.
Just throwing out random thoughts.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, that's something else to think about for sure. That, you know, if nothing else, maybe that could be explored as an alternate play type or something with
right.
the same pieces or
right.
something.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to try. It would be tougher to do a mock-up of that, though, than a card game. Because you'd think with a card game... It's occurred to me that the easiest way to mock that up would just to be to buy a bunch of that, you know, inkjet business card printable stock, right? Pre-perforated stuff.
Oh, I was thinking, or if you like have a bunch of old magic cards or something.
Yeah, well, that's true. I don't
like lands, like super cheap ones. Or yeah. Alternatively, you could just go out and buy a couple cheap dollar decks of cards at the dollar store.
That's true.
And just paste those on there, as long as you got right. the same backs.
Yeah.
Or different backs for different decks within the right. same game.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess mocking that up wouldn't be too tough. It would just, you'd spend a lot of time with the scissors cutting out tiles.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might actually, it might be easy just to print on cardstock. Mm-hmm. You know, because you could fit quite a few on cardstock, and then yeah. you take the time to cut them out.
Right.
And they can be rough. It's not like you have to make them perfect.
Yeah,
you
know, it's prototype. Playtest, yeah.
So.
Right.
But I did see online some of the guys were actually now using that Superior POD place, Superior Print On Demand mm-hmm. place, mm-hmm. for their card games. And they were just going to, they finish a card game, they just send out for a prototype. So that way they have a real prototype with, you know,
oh, yeah.
a good idea with the stuff on it. And then they can practice with that.
Yeah. To try and... I would love to do that. If we get to a point where one of us is... has a, something ready to turn into a prototype, I would probably definitely do that to make one or two yeah. copies.
Because I don't think it's that expensive to make one or two copies. It doesn't look like.
Yeah, yeah. I would probably make, you know, I might even make three or four, one to keep and send a few out to people to try.
Right.
You know?
Just other gamers to play test.
I think that'd be worth it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Gosh, I think I've run a little long here.
It's all right.
On my pitch, so maybe we should wrap this up, huh?
Sure. Sure.
Okay. Moving into plugs. What do you got to plug today?
By the time this episode airs, my friends over at Gita Games, the one who did the Lily Looking Through demo, that yeah. video game demo that's out, yeah. Should have their Kickstarter up and running. Should okay. be running now. So I'll put the link to that on the website. But okay. otherwise, you can go to GitaGames.com, GEETAGames.com, and check that out. Should be, like I said, it should be up and running right now. So if not, they'll have information on it.
Right on. Cool. And I thought I would just plug Mackinac Island Fudge. Because I've eaten way too much of that, and it's freaking delicious.
It is delicious.
Oh, fudge.
You have to walk 8 miles to get rid of that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, Mackinac Island fudge is delicious, and if you see it for sale somewhere, you should buy it, because it is the best fudge in the world.
It is.
Yeah.
I've okay. had fudge from at least 4 different places.
Yeah.
That was the best.
Yeah, it's good. Why fudge? And why Mackinac?
I don't know.
Like, there's got to be some history there.
I would think, yeah.
I can't imagine what it would be, though.
I'm not sure either, but it does make sense that there's got to be some, like, yeah. historical tradition of fudge.
Right.
Or fudge is just a tourist trap thing. I mean, is it? I don't think I've seen it in other places. Traverse City, another place in Michigan, they sell fudge there, yeah. too.
Okay. But not like Mackinac does.
No, no.
I mean, it's a lot of fudge there.
It's a lot of fudge.
Well, hey, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to Building the Game. Please come back and join us every week as we share our new ideas and what we've learned as we go on this crazy journey of becoming game designers. Thanks a lot, Jason.
Thank you, Rob.
See you next time.
See ya.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Yeah, I can hear myself way better.
Oh, now. Man, super better. Super better. Yeah, great. Oh, dude, I'm so happy about this. We're figuring stuff out. Yay! It's awesome.
You've been listening to Building the Game, a proud sponsor of the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social.
Are you going to Gen Con and want to hang out with your favorite podcasts and friends? Come to the Gen Con 2012 Evening Social for dinner and a party on Thursday, August 16th.
Find out more details and get your tickets before they're sold out at GenConSocial.com.